Well, hello and welcome to Mike's Our Lab podcast, episode 153, for the 10th of December, 2017. Well, woke to snow laying fairly thickly here in Wokingham today, and it was very sad because the toy run from Reading to High Close Bernardo's school was due to take place this afternoon. That's now been cancelled. Basically just of 1,000 motorcyclists and pedestrians and everything going on. Even if the snow has cleared, they had to make the decision early in the day. And the forecast is for more snow, and certainly looking at the Merle Garden dashboard, it's just 1 degree there. And so it's as cold there as it is in Wokingham, and the ice and slush along the roads. Just unfortunate. It's been 32nd year of the run, and I don't think it's been cancelled previously, although there might have been one day about 10 years ago when it was very similar weather. But yesterday it was London, and it was cold but a bright day. The winter wonderland was manic around Hyde Park. Absolute chaos. There was a protest going on around Hyde Park Corner, stopping all the traffic. Buses, nothing was moving due to just a number of small number of people with placards wandering around in the road. But otherwise, trains were packed. Carriages were freezing cold due to a part of the train not being heated. And even all the bodies of people couldn't do enough to heat it up, because I think the air conditioning was actually running rather, or just cold air from outside, but being blown in by a forceful fan. So for those who don't travel from on the Waterloo line from Reading, you won't realise that it takes an hour and 20 minutes now on the train. When we first moved to Wokingham, it was a 50-minute journey. And so we can see how things have progressed in these few decades. Meanwhile, the friends we were meeting who come down from Bedford, which is 50 miles rather than the 42 miles from here, were able to do their journey in half an hour. And you still have that luxury from Reading itself. That's when the Paddington line is running normally. So what else went on this week? Well, we had the Xmas pie event at Sweeney Todd's. We had a great table this year. There was two tables put together to accommodate 15 people at the back of the downstairs room. It meant there was plenty of room around us for getting in and out, which is great. Last year we were sort of in the entrance area, which A, is quite narrow, and B, has people pushing by you all the time. So that was very good. I think the two groups of different people, because you tend, on two tables, you do tend to not be able to talk along the whole table length. But we had a great group on our table, and great chats, and chance to get to meet Rupert, know more about what he was doing. And he was going to be doing the Santa run today, so feeling for him as well today. There's so much preparation goes into dressing up the bikes, etc. I was able to pick up my water flow meters from Tara. Tara was offering some water meters, basically to turn the water on and off. And I want to look at them for home automation or garden automation projects next year, using more of the technology and using the Things Network. And the expectation is there's going to be much greater coverage of the area outside Reading, which is currently reasonably well covered. So that's going to be exciting, together with a number of other projects which are coming together on the LP1 side. And Things Network are going to be an integral part of those. So I thank Tara for those. In fact, looking at them, they look very neatly designed. The mechanics of the valve operation is quite separate from the controller unit. They're not as sealed up as you might think, but they obviously meet waterproofing requirements, given that they're attached to a tap. Downside of things just being attached to the tap is that A, you've got to have a suitable fitting, and it can only do a single timing cycle at whatever you set is the same thing, although you can change different days. There's no input to it from the weather conditions. So if more water is needed or less water, we have no control. It should be fairly straightforward, given the sophisticated nature of the electronics, to enhance them. And I don't know about the pricing of these, but the ones I looked at from Hoslock were a very pricey system by the time you put all the various bits and pieces together. So I shall be looking to report on various places about how that project progresses. So let's have a look and see what was going on in the Google Groups. Actually, yeah, the other thing I was mentioning, on Wednesday I went along to the Cambridge Wireless event talking about small cells, and although that was focused on voice communications and how you get voice service in dead spots, not spots, within buildings particularly, and how you deploy cells, given the Faraday nature of a lot of modern office buildings particularly, I think the same thing will arise for LPWAN. And I'd be interested to compare the differences in penetration ability within buildings and how we might do microcells and small cells for that, and compare with what they're currently doing for voice service. It's amazing actually the amount of effort that has to go into providing cell coverage within buildings, particularly these secure financial buildings in London, which is one of the topics of the discussions on that day. That was held at Huawei's offices in Green Park, which is why it was local, although it came from the Cambridge Wireless Group, a group of member companies who arrange events. And I thank the social tech group in Reading for inviting me, and the IET, who also sent invites out. So if anybody wants to know anything more about that, just contact me and I'll give an update of what I found from the event. And a good chance to have a look around the Huawei offices was very interesting. A great canteen serving lots of people with chopsticks, eating away with their chopsticks. And we had a buffet provided at the start of the afternoons of events. And that was a extremely good spread too. But the quality of the talks, I have to say, was reflected as well. A very good sound, which is great. With the so me talking about sound, and I was only talking to Danny in the week about how I'd like to have a better way of improving the sound on here. Still not entirely happy. The quality of the microphone is great because it goes through an analog mixer, but then into just an analog sound card on the PC. I'm always feeling a bit disappointed that I can't get a sound better. Closer to the Twit network sound that they have. I've looked at the Blue microphone, which I think has everything all built into it, and I'd like to try one of those. I've seen one at CEX, so it might be something I'm putting forward as maybe an expert's gift for somebody in is looking to buy me one. And I guess at the beginning, it's a good time to just mention that next week is the Reading Geek Xmas party on Tuesday at the Walkabout Bar. And really all the geek groups are invited, including everyone from our lab. There's no particular way of registering unless you want to register through one of the groups like PHP Barks, who do have on their meetup site. There's no requirement for it. There will be mince pies. And possibly a little bit of extra food. Some people are discussing about clubbing together to buy some food, but there wasn't any sponsorship as the Reading Geek Night wants to be a standalone event in terms of being independent. And so if some groups might be getting together to provide some food, but you can certainly rely on a mince pie or two. And food is available at the Walkabout Bar for purchase in the normal way anyway. Right, so let's into the Google group, and I'm chatting for 10 minutes already. Look at that. So let's start off. Things that suck. There was a post about the new Henry Hoover and the dust extractor unit, which is I saw that, and now it's a standalone wheelie thing on the ground that you plug into the table saw or whatever device it is, and has extra suck. And Arthur says, things that control the suck. If someone wants a project, let's have a look, and posts a link to a YouTube video. Yeah, so looking at the video, it's talking about basically how to control a system for dust extraction and various piping activities, which are a useful thing. In fact, similar, I saw a video in the week, and there was somebody who'd installed piping around their benches for fume extraction, and when they were doing projects that required fume extraction, and they could open up vents in different places. But that was actually just sort of basically taking a cap off a enclosure of a pipe, but still a good idea for Hackspace facilities. So maybe I'll post that one up to on the groups. Well, I hadn't really thought about that. Yeah, that's an interesting project idea. So thanks, Arthur, for that inspiration. And if you want to do a project with control on the dust extraction side of it, involving an Arduino, then check out the video on things that suck. And Tony's bauble hacking competition is in full flow, finishing this coming Wednesday on the 13th. The idea is to create something to hang on a Christmas tree. He's got a couple of rules, basically saying if it's not to be mains powered, if it's battery powered, it needs an on-off switch. No liquids and nothing unsafe is the general goal. I started making a bauble with some LEDs in the most basic way I could think, soldering LEDs together in rows so that I didn't need or series so that I didn't need resistors on each one. And then I'm going to do a 3D printed outside. So that's part of my plan probably for Monday or Tuesday next week to finish it off. So if you've got an idea for something to hang on a Christmas tree, then get baubling. Updates from tools, 3D printers, talking about 3D printers, and donated a while back, but just being trying to be located, is the Ultimaker 2 Plus, I think it is, a 3D printer. And there's a MakerBot which was on the bench. If people saw that, that's going off to Norwich Hackspace. And Richard said, I still have the Idea Works RS 3D printer, which will offer to another Hackspace, unless a new member can think of a local outreach opportunity for it. So I must say, having used it, I can't say it's as easy a printer to use. The software isn't as sophisticated. The machine itself is pretty heavy duty, metal German design and Chinese made, but it had some peculiar things, such as when the software turned off it doesn't drive the, unless you drive it directly the bed to the bottom, it can just drop down, which is sort of hazardous, really. It doesn't sort of have a positive lock on the thread, such as the Ultimaker and the RepWraps do. But Alex has got some ideas on there, and if anyone else has any, then just put them up in the thread. But talking about the Ultimaker itself, Tony's goal was to have it somewhere warm, and at the moment the laser room is deemed too cold for best environment for 3D printing, and so it's being temporarily put on a workbench, but that's not ideal. It needs to be put in place and the wiring tucked away so that it doesn't have to be plugged and unplugged. It's not designed to be done that way. So once that's commissioned that way, it'll be available for everybody. And certainly the Cura software is probably more user-friendly, a bit more graphic than Frontface, which is what we've normally used with the RepWrap. OpenSCAD is still a great option for creating your models, although Fusion 360 is what other people are using. Both of those are available on the desktop computer in the corner, and you transfer your files using a standard size SD card, which there was one with the 3D printer. But it does get full up, apparently, and so it only has a certain number of files that the machine will actually read, even though you could put more on the SD card. So management and clearing of that card is probably an important part of the workflow. There were lots of discussion about Alex's garden hacking, and he's been making progress and reporting back. I think he was so busy doing that, he didn't manage to get along to the pie evening, which was unfortunate. It would have been good to get some reports face-to-face. But he said he'd been doing huge lot of hard work getting them out, and the advice had been really helpful to him. And there's a little bit of a hot topic, which comes up from time to time, and is worth reiterating, and based on the posts this week. Ian was asking about borrowing borrowing a Mitosaur to do some picture framing. And yes, the replies indicate that there's many reasons why removing tools from the space is not something that the Hackspace wants to accommodate, and would add difficulties if they did. They don't mention things like insurance and safety and all that side of it, as it's assumed that members who are borrowing would take those sides. But as a place, as a company, there is that consideration. But also whether we want to have a loan out tool, like it has been discussed, as people say that recently the tools are a lot more expensive from hire shops, is because they have to cover some of the additional hazards and risks associated with it. Tom, but the position as one of the director side of things, and if things are loaned to the space, it's interesting that Tom emphasises that people who loan things to the space aren't. It's not done on the basis that they can just sort of store them there and take them back whenever they want. That if they're loaned, they're under an arrangement where they're if the tool is no longer wanted or needed by the space, or it's been replaced, then first refusal will go back obviously to the person who offered it, but it's should be considered more a donation as opposed to a straight loan. And I think that's a good point to emphasize. And Ian's quite correct response is to say basically just needs to get himself better organized to bring his project to the space and do it. And for people who travel some distance, I can understand that that adds a lot of extra complication. But I think organizing yourself around that is the best way of doing it. Not only is it a better environment for doing a lot of this, unless you've got a good, great workshop yourself, but you've also got all the additional bits and pieces, as is mentioned. There's a guillotine that can be used for cleaning up mitre joints. So you always end up with sometimes these little bits of frayed wood that need to be cleaned and everything else. So lots of reasons. But it's good to emphasize. And if you have a look at the responses yourself, if you're thinking about asking about borrowing stuff, and of course make sure that you're not just borrowing stuff for even probably a couple of hours is not a great thing to do, because the chances are the very person whose project is reliant on that thing you are borrowing will come in and quite rightly object, and the consequences for membership is it's obviously going to cause problems. So posting up obviously elicits this response, but not posting is not an option either. I guess the only exception would be where people are doing an official project off-site, such as an event, and if things are then removed, they'll be part of the risk assessment and proposals for such a project. And certainly when we've done things away, it has been necessary to borrow things like multimeters, I know, for the Year of Culture. So I guess that's something that probably could do with good clarification, just to indicate that there are occasions where official events have been taking place that things are removed from the and indeed things like the MIDI board used to go on various trips, and I think currently residing down with Basingstoke. I think at the moment, while all the work's going on in the space around with the new heat pump that's in the chill room. And in fact, mentioning that, there were three remote controls on for the three different heat pumps, and although they all interoperate, they have a peculiar thing where when you turn them on with the remote control, it remembers what settings were there. And so if you're using different ones on different ones, apparently it does cause some confusion to the heat pumps. I'm not sure exactly how that manifests itself, but certainly Tony is. But also we need to keep a remote control near each of the heat pumps, and I found two downstairs, so it's better to try and at least have maybe three of those holders and identify each one belonging to a particular place, not to be removed, I think. I shall actually probably have to post something up, because I haven't seen that, unless it's been mentioned elsewhere in the threads as I go through for this week. On the What Does Our Lab Do For Me section, David asks about some icons that were obscuring a bit of his Cura menu. I didn't really know where they came from. One thing, if you ask up the question, you have to give all the sort of details, such as what operating system, what version, what computer platform, and things like that. Maybe which display you're using, because different types of display connections put different things in different places. So if it's a mobile interface, for instance, it would be different from a desktop one. Anyway, it turns out that the icons displayed by the video card driver, in this case, NVIDIA, as an overlay feature They can be switched off only by logging into a web account. Not helpful if you never created such an account or it's not your machine. Mark says, yeah, it seems like quite a bad feature. Ben clarifies, the GeForce experience requires you to log in. So if you were in a secure environment, you would just install the basic drivers instead, not the GeForce ones, I guess. He also thinks that the overlay feature isn't on by default. Oh, he also says, yes, you could also get to the settings feature without logging in by using Alt-Z or Alt-Z. He says, the window controls, it's not apparent how you get to them. I only found it out by Googling. Nope, and then further in the thread, it seems that the various suggestions of the Alt-Z didn't work, and that the defaults may have changed over some updates as it was installed a year ago and never had a problem until recently, and that maybe the defaults had changed or they added extra options. He said, begrudgingly, I activated the experience, which I'd never had, because who needs another marketing login, he says. So, and then he could access all the cards. General game overlay setting was changed. So, yes, and so I think indicative of the way that this rapid deployment of updates can change the nature. So you buy a piece of hardware and then suddenly, due to a software update, all the functionality changes. And I did hear somebody saying something similar about some of the smart cars and their Tesla interface had changed after a software update. Not in such a dramatic way, but it does indicate that so many products now are a combination of software, firmware and hardware, and functionality really is exposed via the software side of things. Oh, and in the thread about inductions, a new four-letter acronym comes up, SQEP, S-Q-E-P. We still seem to get some peculiarities with different ways people. One of the great things about Google Groups, and we've been discussing this the other day, is that people can read and post via email, and plenty of people do that. The downside is it does seem to vicariously add in what should be shown as a quoted text. And this happens on both the web interface, the mobile interface, and where people are doing emails or otherwise. It seems sometimes that it incorporates all of the information. I'm really quite sure it's not handled correctly, really, in that the quoted text should be just quoted and only revealed when you need to see it. I guess for emails, it's perhaps a little bit more difficult, but anything to do with the web or mobile interface should be able to do it that way. Anyway, that was an interesting comment from David about Derek's discussion about his. He always does a special project at winter when they serve the shots at his Christmas table parties and things. And he always tries to think of a different theme because there's a group of friends and each of them tries to up each other's presentation mode. And he's used facilities at the R Lab last year. I seem to remember he was busy making an illuminated table with RGB LEDs that would change colour depending on the spirit that was being served and other interesting features. And using his woodworking skill, he produces some really smart designs and creations. But the downside of the Google Groups there is that it doesn't display it. And people keep suggesting that there are better forum methods. So far, we haven't found one that deals with all the spam as well as Google Groups, but or is universally usable, even if it's not as elegant as it might be. The hunt continues. But also, one of the things that there that could be a useful addition, maybe we could have, I was suggesting a different form of calendar. And so Danny went on to have a look at that. But there also, one of the things that we may need is some sort of way of doing a buddy system. If somebody's working on tools that are hazardous and needs a buddy with them, find out if somebody else is available to come and join in the space for a particular time slot. I guess that would come in under calendar and scheduling. It could be an extension to that, just an idea. And an interesting thread here. I mentioned last week that I found some particularly interesting bits in the thread that I highlighted in the podcast. Well, this week, I think this one, the first one at least come to here, is the Forstner bit. And I knew what the bit was, but I didn't know that was its name. So for those who might be ignorant like me, it's the type of bit that effectively has a cylinder at the end for larger diameters, although even smaller ones were available, and then has cutters set into the face of that cylinder, if that's a description you can understand. And Gavin, well, there's a couple of bits buried in here. One is a great picture of the project, of the finished product that he created. But the discussion is actually about the tools that he was using and how well they worked or otherwise. And in the case of the Forstner bit, it was about creating the hollowing out the wooden tub pot that he's making, a pen pot for a colleague made on the wood lathe. He says, I'm pretty pleased with the output and thinking of making more Christmas presents. But he was having to cut in, so it's made of hazel apparently, and he was, the end grain of the hazel was along the line of the cylinder, as it were. So he was having to drill effectively a large 50mm hole in the end grain of the hazel. He said the wood was hard and there was a lot of smoke and burning involved, a blunting of the drill bit, and they overcame this eventually by using a sequence of drills to getting up to the size, each removing a small amount of material. And Casale can understand some of the complications here, but between Arthur, Tom, Derek and Eric, there's a lot of interesting notes and comments which could be valuable for anyone undertaking a similar project. Partly it's, was this the right way of doing it, or would it have been better to use some kind of, something like on the metal lathe, where you could go inside and just remove a bit of material at a time. Another was talking about the different type, the angles of the cut, and it could potentially be a problem. And Eric quotes an example of, try drilling acrylic with a 59-0 bit used for general purpose metal like steel. And he says it equals disaster. I think he's referring to the problem about the way that basically it can easily shatter the acrylic due to sort of binding. I mean, there's a heating and binding effect, but there's also obviously this cutting angle thing. And so that's what he's sort of saying, is that the angle of the drill is often a happy medium for different types of material rather than the ideal for any. Gary's going to experiment with another Bosch bit that he has on order rather than whatever the make of the one that was currently in the space was. I don't think that's mentioned. And then there's also a bit of discussion about the different types of wood, what cutting speed you might be doing. But apparently there are hardwoods and softwoods, but there are also things called soft hardwoods. And you're in the danger of, when you're on a lathe, of course, of potentially splitting a bowl or a piece you're making once you're getting down to a certain thinness of wall. And so that can be a significant factor. So a lot of discussion there. So if you're thinking about doing any wood turning and similar items, have a look at the picture, have a look at the comments. I think it'll all be very helpful. And the names on the thread there, particularly Derek, picking up all, not only all this information for himself, which might be new or might be known to him already, but advice coming in from other people is always helpful. It's sort of another, what does our lab do for me? So I mentioned Derek's project, and he gives a bit more details in my Vodka Luge thread. Finally, I managed to get my Raspberry Pi and Arduino-powered Vodka Luge completed in time. Basically, conical flasks of vodka are pumped onto an ice block with a small channel for the vodka to flow down and land in a shot glass, which I carved from an ice block using a cordless drill and bits and a subtle application of an angle grinder. The pumps are peristaltic pumps and give about 30 centiliter shot. To order the desired flavour, you tweet the Vodka Luge's Twitter account with the correct hashtag. It was lit with NeoPixels, and the final touch is the pumps, the type used in dialysis machine Tony printed me a set of kidney-shaped shot glasses to add a certain je ne sais quoi. And Luke says, brilliant. And Eric says, kidney-shaped stainless steel bowl to collect the drips could be better. So, and there's a link to a video on Vimeo. I can't play that on the setup, so I'll have to look at that on another machine. But you can find a link to that video in his post there. Looks as though the soldering workshop for the end of the Board Stooping project will be pushed forward into the new year. Because Jeremy's very busy and it seems other people will be too. So Chris saying, yes, certainly be hectic in the brewery too. And I mentioned about the heat pumps, and I found that one wasn't working, and it turned out one of the brakes had tripped. Not sure which one it was. I couldn't find one marked up, and I haven't had a comment back about which one Gavin found, but apparently Gavin found one had tripped somewhere. I then found the manual online and looked at how to remove the filters. Basically, it's straightforward to just pull them out. They curve around the main fan unit. There's two of them. The one on the left had a small crack on an edge, which if it gets some super glue, we can probably glue that. Okay, but unfortunately it has to sort of flex, so it needs to be quick burst on glue. It wasn't a real problem, just something I noted for future reference. And I took them out and gave them a good hoover. They're designed to be cleaned rather than replaced every time. And Tony Short posted up that, and that was from the 6th, he said for the next three Thursdays, so that'll be two more this week and next week. Be at the space for 3D, available for 3D design advice and introductions to the Ultimaker. Doing some 3D printing, and he also posted up some pictures of some of the things that he'd been making recently, including a very impressive Chinese lion figurine. And Vance have an offer of a free Kodak ink cartridge for a model KD30BK, a black ink cartridge. He said, I no longer have the printer, so free to a good home. So he posts a picture up, so it shows which models it's compatible with if you're not sure yourself. And Dale was looking for a bit of reassurance about wiring up some audio, 6 or 7 low load 9 volt audio devices, less than 100 milliamps each from a single 9 volt 2 amp power supply. And Nigel comes back saying, yes, just wire them in parallel. You don't need to have. They should have their own internal regulators, which I'm sure is true as well. So, but Dale was wondering whether he needed any smoothing in the RC filters to smooth out any bumps. And it is the case that some of them are half-wave rectified rather than fully wave rectified, even though they say DC. And it is the case in some audio applications that you do need to do some extra smoothing. But that's something you could easily look at with one of the scopes at the space. But you'll certainly hear it if it comes through on an audio line. And good news that the laser cutter was back up and running on the night of the Xmas Pi event. Richard and Rupert worked hard to get that back up and running, together with help from others. It was ahead in the machine job to get all the wiring in place after the power supply arrived sufficiently promptly from the eBay order, so that was great. And a great crowd of people waiting the projects to get on board, and they're coordinating it. So if you've got a project, best to post up. Make sure that the other jobs aren't sort of ahead of you, and you don't waste a trip to the space. So good news. And there was also some discussion in the thread about the different pricing for the commercial jobs and whether it should just be twice the hobby price or not. I think the conclusion is that it's a reasonable pricing between the two, and the use of the machine is very good. Eric is looking for an email address for Damien Axford at us, or a director at Swindon Makerspace. So if anyone has that, email Eric with the information. And some people may know that Pav is an HCPC registered paramedic. And he does lots of different shift work, so comes and goes unexpected times. Anyway, he was being asked about popping up and offering some help in response to Eric's question about first aid kits for the Basis Don't Make a Space, and offering advice and offering to go and give them a bit of an introduction to it. And in the past, he's done introductions to CPR and medical emergencies at the space for people. And it always available if people want to get together with two or three to go through such a session again. And there was a request about being taken off the mailing list, and people assume it was to do with the Google group. And Hugo points out that there is instructions at the bottom of every email from the list if you receive it by email, telling you how to unsubscribe. So if you find it's too noisy yourself, you can always listen to the podcast if you want to catch up audio wise. You don't have to be subscribing to it if you don't want to be. Another really one of the advantages of the Google group system, it handles subscriptions and non-subscriptions and moderations and things pretty well. And one of the things, a lot of the projects that we do at the space are relevant to other groups and not necessarily just Hackspaces. And Graham was asking about reproducing the code for the way the door lock works and asking if it was open source. Scott says that some of it is, but it's not all readily available, although the older version could be. And Richard pops up and says, yes, the original interface and power supply noted out on the wiki under access control. But are they? Is it still relevant, or is there something new? He has the source for those projects if people are interested. And Alex is interested and says he'd be keen to learn how to recreate it. Maybe could do a workshop on it. So that might be something that's arranged in the new year. And I mentioned about Derek's wood turning workshops. And apparently Toby's has secured an additional lathe. And so Derek could now offer one additional slot on each of the workshops next weekend. And there's a link in the calendar if you have a look in the thread entitled Wood Turning Bowl Turning Workshops. And apparently the lathe is scheduled to arrive, so it's possible that it may not be available, but more news should come during the week. So but if you are interested, keep an eye on that thread. And Ian's asking about AJ or JAJ, a parcel wrapped in black plastic on the project shelves downstairs, been there since September, labelled AJ or JAJ, containing a frame and some LED strips. Anyone claim it? And no one has so far, so if it's yours or we know whose it is, posted up in that thread. And Ian also alerts us to a fault in the plug of the pedestal grinder. So he said it will be out of commission till probably Monday. That's today, because if I didn't mention, I started the podcast yesterday. There was so much news and information I ran out of time in the morning, had things to do in the afternoon. But Alex saying it's a big three-phase jobby of a connector, so that had to be sourced today, as I say, today, Monday. And we finished the podcast with a mathematical puzzle as a 3D printing project. Alex posts some images of something that somebody wants to have 3D printed. And for those who don't know, Alex is on a site called 3D Hubs, where people ask for or offer 3D printers availability for printing and design help, and other people ask for help, and a bid is made. And in this case, it's an interesting twisted form made with diamonds intersecting a plane that has a twist in it. The best way I can describe it, but if you want to really see what it looks like, have a look on the pictures. And Hugo, who's not only a humorist, but a great one with the formulae, gives the information about something like power station cooling tower or Pringle equation. And he gives the raw equation, and then in a follow-up post explains how one might use the equation in a parametrization formula in such as OpenSCAD, which is the formula-based design tool that we often use for 3D printing, commonly used on the RepRap, as opposed to the visual ones. Although I think Fusion 360 can do either, and it is more visual in it, the way that it presents it. Anyway, he shows some of the formulae. So if you want an interesting project, perhaps for your children to get their heads around, got some really interesting formulae in that last post from Hugo. So that one could be a puzzle for Christmas, and not the sort of thing you'd find in the average Christmas cracker. So on that note, that was the last post for this week. Caught up now. Yes, it was a busy week. Something like 35 minutes or 40 minutes here of recording. Be compressed down once to take out some of the gaps. So it'll be maybe two more podcasts before Christmas, maybe one long one. So this is Mike the Bee, signing off.